Greetings and welcome to this episode of The Profit in the Nonprofit, where you will discover what it takes to start, build, and fund your nonprofit. I am your host, Sandra Chaney, and we're back with part two of how to heal your own injustice to have a successful and impactful nonprofit. And my guest is Erica Bowen. And if you missed part one, I would ask that you go back and listen to part one first and then come to part two, because part one will lead you into part two. So Erica, welcome back and thank you so very much. Can you just once again give the listening audience a little bit about who you are?
Sure. Thank you so much. And I'm loving the fact we're on a part two. It's been such a good conversation. So
yes,
cool to be here again. For those who are new and didn't listen to part one, I'm Erica Bowen. I'm a forensic psychologist and coaching psychologist. I've spent 20 years working in the field of domestic violence prevention up until last year as a university professor and researcher. And now I am a growth coach for nonprofit leaders, change makers, however you want to identify yourselves. And I work from a trauma-informed perspective. So my perspective is to be able to identify and understand trauma and how it plays out, and to help you achieve the impact you want, despite having potentially lived through trauma, but also to make sure that you don't burn out along the way, because we all know there is so much to be done, and you're definitely part of that picture.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And the burnout is real when it really, well, in business, yeah. Period, the burnout is real. We didn't talk about that in part one, but the burnout is, especially if you're not taking care of yourself and you have trauma mixed in there. Yeah. It is. So I just remember probably a month or so ago, one weekend, I was so exhausted. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even get out of bed, and I couldn't figure out why was I so tired. And I recognized that I was going and had not taken a moment to like breathe, yeah, or to stop or to, and my body just said, we can't go anymore. You're just going to have to rest or else. And so the burnout is, and especially in the nonprofit world.
Yes.
Service. We're about service. That service.
Absolutely.
And I think people, we're looking at it the wrong way though. I feel like people in a nonprofit arena, not everybody, but I feel like they feel like service means that you have to work your finger to the bone, and it doesn't mean that you can make a profit. It doesn't mean that you can't take care of yourself. It doesn't mean that all those other things. And I totally disagree with that. I think that you got to take care of yourself in order to really have an impact within the community that you want to have an impact in. So you said something when we ended part one about your trauma.
Yeah. Oh,
wait, yes. Is it a scar or is it still an open wound?
Yeah.
I love that.
And I think it's just to kind of acknowledge the fact that actually just because you've experienced trauma doesn't mean you can't have the impact that you want to have. It is not kind of coming out of, you know, that everything has to be perfect. But I think you have to have that awareness and know how to coexist with it when it's not completely healed.
And I like that, because I know for a fact that there was some areas of my life where the wound was still open. It wasn't necessarily completely healed. It was like, because we're so quick to stuff things down, and we're so quick to say I'm over that. When we are not. And I just remember one day being in a support group. I was actually leading the support group. And I shared this, I think, on an earlier podcast, but I was leading a support group with a therapist, actually.
Right.
And which was so funny. But I'm in this support group and I'm leading it with her because she asked me to. And there was I asked a question in the group, and a young lady said something. It was about her wearing baggy clothes. Now, I'm not going to go into what the baggy clothes, why that triggered something for me, but it triggered something for me because of my own past history with domestic violence and sexual assault. And I shut down in the midst of her saying something to me, and I didn't even realize I had shut down.
Yeah.
In the midst of it. And she took over because she recognized what had happened. Later on, after the soap, after it was over, she came to me and she said, when was the last time you just took some time for yourself? And I looked at her, I'm like, well, what do you mean? She said, you shut down in the midst of it. She said, you're trying to run a nonprofit. You're trying to help me with a support group. You're doing this, you're doing that. When was the last time, as a business owner, as a leader, as someone who does, and I was doing domestic violence training, I was doing all this stuff because I'm trying to help people become aware.
Yes.
Yeah. And it came out that way.
And so, it's incredible how it does show up.
Right. And I'm sharing that because it was a wound for me that I honestly thought I had really healed, but it was something about her talking about her experience and her baggy clothes that it hit hard for me. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to go get some help, because I did not know that had happened. I honestly didn't know I had shut down. If truth be told, I didn't realize I shut down. I didn't even know it. I thought I was just being quiet. I had no, and I think that that's what we're talking about when it comes to trauma and how it can show up in a space where you're not even aware that it has shown up. And I really want us to even talk about how that shows up when we're serving our community, because I was serving my community.
Yeah.
And it showed up in me serving the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think some of the interesting ways that trauma does kind of play out and what you experience there, that kind of sense of dissociation and shutting down, is a classic trauma symptom. So, you know, if you're in a room where people don't understand trauma and they see you do that, that's something that then somehow has got to be explained, you know, and you will not be in a position to explain it. But then, you know, you can imagine being in that situation in a room full of people who don't understand what trauma is, and them just really not being sure what that means, or you've done it, or what they should do, how they should react, what's going on, you know, any of that. But the other thing, you know, that sense of restlessness that you have to kind of keep going, keep busy all the time, is usually a way of, again, trying to avoid negative feelings. And sometimes those are related to trauma and sometimes they're not, but it's one of those things that, you know, if you've got that general sense of can't sit still, can't sit and relax, can't just sit and watch a film, can't just sit and read a book, because actually any space that's quiet is a space for those emotions and for those feelings, and those feelings aren't pleasant. And so what we want to do is try and avoid them, or we try and numb them. So that's why, if you've had, you know, trauma in the past, sometimes people end up self-soothing through alcohol and drugs, because actually it's those underlying feelings that people do not want to experience. And there are only so many ways that you can kind of really avoid them. So, you know, it can have anything, you know, it can play out in so many different ways. You know, that underlying sense that maybe you don't trust people. Again, because actually, if your trauma history has told you not to trust people, particularly people that we're socialized to believe we should trust, like parents, like people we're in love with, anything where there is that abuse of trust can also then play out in other non-intimate, non-familial relationships, because those relationships can kind of act as a bit of a blueprint and go, okay, well, we're going to train you how to deal with other people. But actually, if you're dealing with people that can't be trusted or bring harm where there should be no harm, then that just, again, provides another filter through which you see every other kind of relationship that you have.
Yeah. And as you were talking, I was just thinking about people who have been bullied and things like that. And then they want to, then they go and they, you know, start maybe projects or events or even nonprofits around dealing with bullying or even, you know, suicide and things like that. But yet they still haven't really dealt with theirs.
Yes.
And it comes out even though they don't think they're bullying.
Yes.
But and they are.
It is, absolutely, you know, and it is that sense of, you know, if they're the dynamics that you're, that you've been trained in. You know, I was talking to a former colleague yesterday, and we were talking about kind of like, you know, we all create environments for each other, and each environment is a training ground, whether we like it or not. you know, and so mm-hmm. people that we bring into that environment will learn something from the environment that we create. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that we may be in a family environment, we may be in a workplace environment, we may be in a marital environment, whatever that is, each environment has distinct characteristics that are so specific to that situation. And we'll, you know, we are, as people, we are adaptive. We adapt to thrive in our environment. And mm-hmm. so trauma reactions are simply a way of adapting to an environment that usually is no longer present. So, you know, again, speaking back to that idea of, you know, reacting to things that aren't even in the room, it's that reacting to that environment that you're no longer in, but that's the way that your brain has now been trained to think that that's the environment. So, you know, there's no shame in trauma, because how else were you supposed to react?
I love that. There's no shame in trauma. And I want to reiterate, this isn't necessary to deter anybody who's interested in wanting to start a nonprofit, because nonprofits are surely needed. This is just to arm you with some information so cool. that if you're thinking about starting a nonprofit, or you have one and you are frustrated and you're trying to figure out why is it that is some things aren't working out the way that they're working out, or you can't find the right board members, or whatever that is. Sometimes it has to do with us, the leaders, the founders, and we need to look at our own. I always say it's an inside job, because everything is within. Everything Absolutely. Is within, and you have to go within in yes. order to figure out why. Why is my environment on the outside like this? Because yes. it's what's on the inside. And until you are able to deal with the inside, the outer part, whether it's your business, whatever that is, it's going to always look chaotic. It's going to always probably frustrate you. You're going to want to throw in the towel a lot. Nonprofit in itself is already, you know, it's a rewarding, I don't want to say job, but it's something rewarding that you want to do, but it also comes with its own set of challenges.
Yeah.
So you have to know who you are on the inside. And so I wanted to do this show because of my own experience with trauma and perfectionism, because my trauma caused perfectionism in me. That is and I daily, Erica, I am having to put the perfectionism down daily. Yes.
And it's so classic. It really, really is. You know, perfectionism is about control, you know, and what we try to do is to control the outcome, particularly when it involves other people's judgment. So the moment we step into a place where the work we do is going to be viewed externally, or that we might receive feedback, if we've ever been particularly in a traumatic relationship, then that feedback hits harder.
Yes.
Because it's landing on a soft target. You know, we've been there before. And we're also now in a kind of a heightened state of that hypervigilance, that kind of being, you know, aware of the threat before it's even there. And it may not even show up, but we're going to be prepared anyway. So that over-preparedness means we're going to do everything we can to yes. be as perfect so that we don't get criticized, so that our self-esteem doesn't get knocked again. So, you yes. know, that inner critic is not proven right, because actually you're above any form of judgment.
You know, well, you know, it's interesting. I'm sorry. I want to say that, because it also comes down to not just that, but also even, you know, for nonprofits, especially when they're looking for money and funding, right? Yes. And they go after a grant and you get comments back and you take it personal, and all of a sudden you go on attack.
Absolutely. And interestingly, we have a very similar experience in academia, because we write papers, we write grants, and we get the feedback back. So in both contexts, the same stuff kind of comes up, you know, and, you know, we know that criticism is in the eye of the beholder. It's got nothing to do with the person that it's directed at. You know, it's usually what's going on for them. So, you know, it takes a long time to be able to sit there and go, okay, that's fine. That's your opinion. You're entitled to it. I do not need to pay attention to it. It's just your opinion. And your opinion doesn't define who I am, which I think when you've had experiences like domestic abuse, you know, you've lived in an environment where their opinion does define who you are, because you've heard their opinion so much, you know, and you know what's right, what's wrong, what you can do, what you can't do. And that starts to create your own identity, which isn't who you are.
It's right.
You know, and the identity piece then is actually very difficult to heal from, because you're having to heal on many, many, many levels, you know. And so that kind of negative feedback, criticism, or even just kind of like suggestions.
You
know, you immediately go, oh my God, I'm dreadful, I'm awful, I'm incompetent, I can't do this, what am I doing? I'm being an absolute fool, even turning
it's
up.
It's funny, so I was helping someone last summer, literally, with a grant, you know, with you know, looking at how they were writing grants, and it came back, and they were like, oh my God, and I had to tell them, okay, listen, this isn't personal.
No,
it's just that you don't, as I said, everybody thinks that, you know, you, every level of grants are different, whether it's, you know, foundational, yes, local, or federal.
Yeah.
And I said, so you can't take it personal, the feedback that I'm providing, I'm just telling you how you need to make the changes. And they just was like, oh, I'm not good. I'm like, no, that's not true. This is not about you. And so even in, as a reviewer, when we are writing our comments, they always tell us, you know, don't make it about the person, make it about the application.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
That you don't say the applicant, or you don't say the organization, right. You say the application, because it's about the application. And even in doing that, sometimes though, people still would take it personal.
But you can imagine, I mean, if you're writing a grant to apply for money to fund a nonprofit, and the nonprofit has originated from a point of lived experience.
Yes.
Then disentangling your writing from your identity is really, really hard.
Hard. Yep.
So then it doesn't matter how it's phrased. It's just the fact that that will be interpreted through that. I'm dreadful. I'm rubbish. Why am I wasting my time? Clearly, this is just not what I should be doing. And I'm an awful person. You know, it will go as far, you know, much, much deeper than that. And I think that, again, is that kind of, it's the overreaction, which is a key sign of trauma, to that kind of feedback. You know, the wanting to throw in the towel when you receive developmental feedback.
Right.
I think is very much more present when people have got a trauma history. And obviously, worst case scenario, that can lose you your credibility with other people and with your stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that. Yes, I definitely was going to, you know, yeah. At the end of the day, too, I also feel something you said about identity, and I didn't think about that until you just said it. We do bring our whole identity into, you know, the nonprofit. It's almost as if you and the nonprofit are one.
Absolutely. And then where has any of that stuff got to go? The only thing it's going to be is to hit your core, you know, and those kind of wounds, again, are very, very difficult to step forward from, particularly if they're, again, hitting a soft target. So, you know, it is about working from a point of view of having a scar rather than an open wound, because once the wound is closed, yeah, it's still going to be a bit tender.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to see things how they are. You're going to be in a position where you can take perspective in a healthier way, where you can engage in critical discussion without feeling as though people are ripping you apart personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of that enables you to be much more constructive and much more personally effective if you're leading a team, if you're having those conversations, if you're talking to the media, you know, all of that stuff.
Yes.
Is easier to do and to navigate from a perspective of healing than from a perspective of ongoing trauma.
So we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, I definitely want to talk about how does one really begin to heal their own injustices. And I know we've talked about that, yes, the scar is there and the wound is closed, but I always say that there's always still some embers, you know, like, because you don't forget, you don't, as much as we want to forget, we really don't forget.
No, we don't.
We don't. So, but I really want to talk about how does one begin to heal, and what are, if there are any steps that you might be able to provide, and especially for those of us, because I've been to therapy many times, but beyond therapy, there's got to be some other things that one can do in addition to, you know, going to therapy. So we're going to take a commercial break and we'll be right back.
When you leave your business, do you leave the door unlocked? When facing legal matters in the business world, do not leave your business unprotected. There is help when it comes to business contracting, even collecting past due receivables from clients. An experienced attorney is critical to resolving disputes. Don't do it alone.
At SJS Law Firm, their mission is to partner with clients to help them achieve the business of their dreams and plans with timely and strategic legal advice. Their legal counselors and advisors committed, providing individualized service that is tailored to the unique needs of your business. SJS Law Firm provides the legal support you need to move forward with confidence. Secure the knowledge that you have a legal team watching out for your best interests. Don't leave the door open. Call SJS Law Firm, serving small business owners, entrepreneurs, and nonprofits. Call 202-505-5309. That's 202-505-5309. Or find them at the sjslawfirm.com.
Are you looking to start a nonprofit and don't know where to begin? Or are you a nonprofit owner who's looking for funding? Greetings, I am Sandra Chaney, and I have over 20 years of experience helping nonprofits either find funding or helping you to create your nonprofit. Schedule a free 25-minute consultation with me, Sandra Chaney, a nonprofit consultant and funding strategist. You may contact me at www.sandrachaney.com. Click on coaching and you'll see nonprofit strategists. I look forward to seeing you soon.
So welcome back to The Profit and the Nonprofit. And we're talking to Erica Bowen on how to heal your own injustice to have a successful and impactful nonprofit. So Erica, I really want to jump into now, how does one heal? How does one begin to heal their own injustice? Because I'm going to tell you, a lot of times people don't like therapy, especially in the Black community. I'm just going to have to go there.
No.
Because we are taught that we don't talk about anything outside, of our own. I don't know about other communities, but I know in my community, we don't, therapy, you talk amongst yourselves, but you don't go to therapy, for that. And it's like, no, you do need therapy, but even outside of therapy, what are other steps that, one can take? Because even for me, I still have to do things. Yeah. I still have to make sure that, my mind is still in that thriving mode, I'm not, because something can trigger anything. Can trigger. So let's just talk about that, because I do want to leave leave business owners and nonprofit founders with ways to thrive in their life, but also in their business.
Cool. And I mean, obviously, it does depend on where you are in all of this.
Yes, exactly. It does. Well, that's true. That's why I say therapy.
But I mean, specifically around trauma. So, for people who are sitting there thinking, oh God, maybe I need to go and find something. So there are a couple of kind of evidence-based approaches to working with trauma. One of them is called EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. And the other is trauma-informed cognitive behavioral therapy. So they're the kind of the two mainstream evidence-based approaches that have been shown to be effective. Mm-hmm. There are also a whole raft of other non-therapy based approaches. So depending on your orientation, you've got things like EFT.
Oh, yes.
Which is the tapping, you know, and mm-hmm. that's also been shown to be very effective. It's less widely endorsed than traditional therapy, but I think that's political rather than anything else, to be honest.
I use tapping. I actually do use it. And at first I'm thinking, this is not going to work. Like, really? Yeah. I'm tapping on these points on my face and stuff, but it really does work.
Yes, it does. And something that I came across really recently, and I got trained in last year just because I found it to be so much more effective than anything I'd seen before, is something called havening. And this is still what people would call experimental, simply because there have been no large trials. Mm-hmm. But I've used it probably with best 20, nearly 30 people, and everybody has benefited from it. So that's...
What is that?
So it's interesting because actually the founder is a guy called Ronald Rudin, and he's an MD and a neuroscientist. So it comes from kind of slightly unorthodox beginnings. But mm-hmm. he actually got really, really interested in EFT and how that worked. But being a scientist, was less convinced by the explanation of how EFT worked. So over many, many years, he developed his own system, and actually it's touch-based. So, for example, if I'm working with a client and I don't have a requirement that all my clients have experienced trauma, and I certainly don't go digging for it either.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But there are many situations where trauma will come up, and it's usually at the point at which people realize they're holding themselves back, but they don't know why. Mm-hmm. And it'll be that kind of, I know what I need to be doing, but I just can't get myself to do it. And a lot of the time with my clients, when we kind of start digging around what that is and what comes up for them, then they'll suddenly realize that actually there's something linked to a trauma experience before in their, you know, in their prior lives. So havening is touch-based. And it's one of these things that when you're taught it, you think, oh, actually, we kind of do a lot of this fairly intuitively. So mm-hmm. we can use it on ourselves, which is part of the beauty of it. But if you're wanting to be to have trauma treated, you need to find a havening techniques practitioner. That's just the mm-hmm. way licensing works. And so one of the techniques is to basically rub the palms of our hands together across each other. And what you're doing in that space is triggering a higher level of what are called delta waves in the brain. And delta waves are part of non-REM sleep. And so what they do is enable the kind of the encoding of trauma to be changed. And you can use it. It's very, very good for relaxation. If you're somebody who uses affirmations, mm-hmm. then you can do this and say your affirmations to yourself. And the likelihood is that they will seem a little more real to you than just saying them out loud normally. And that's, again, due to the fact that what you're triggering are delta waves in the brain. So you can use it for dealing with anxiety. You can use it for helping to deal with feelings of being overwhelmed. There are protocols to help you deal with challenging emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that within my normal coaching. But sometimes you get to a point where words are not the best way of dealing with the issue. Mm-hmm. So the havening, the tapping, anything that kind of gets around your verbal centers in your brain can sometimes mm-hmm. be the best way of dealing, certainly with the underlying emotions. But other things like starting your day by journaling, you know, to set your mindset up so that you can journal and clear your head of any of the negative stuff that you might have woken up with. And also, once you get it out of your head, you can kind of see it. You know,
right.
We get so used to living with the internal stuff we say that we don't challenge it. And I think once you've written it down, you can look at it and go, oh God, am I really thinking that this morning? Is that really true? So, you know, is that really the case? You know, and you can reality test for yourself, which is something that, you know, a lot of the time in coaching we'll say, you know, what is the truth there? Is that really the truth? And often when we're making those kind of internal sweeping statements, but, you know, I'm just not good enough. Well, is that really true? What tells you that's the case? You know,
yeah, I will dump. I'm sorry. I will sometimes just dump in the morning. Like I'll write and just dump whatever my thoughts are to clear my energy. Absolutely. And to clear my space.
Yes.
And then I will meditate. I love yoga. So I will you know, do some yoga. Yep. I'm a nature girl, so I will go, you know, I have some trails near me and I'll go walk in nature, because it's just something yep. about getting out in nature or getting near water yes. as well.
Yeah.
To just release, you know, and let go of Absolutely. Whatever that is, but dumping, you know, yeah. I found myself this morning waking up thinking of some negative thoughts. I'm like, well, what is that about? I literally asked myself, why are you thinking that?
Yeah.
I had to literally ask myself that question. I'm going, because that's not true. Whatever that is. So I had to let it go. So Absolutely. I do even ask, I never used to do that, but now I do. Brilliant. I asked myself the question because it was business related. It was related to something cool. that I'm going to be doing today. And it was like, well, how do you already answering the question before it's answered. Let that go.
Absolutely. You know, and that again, you know, particularly when you've kind of got that experience of trauma, you already think you know the answers, you know, and you're preempting the answer, you know, because it's a way, again, of staying in control and staying safe. You know, it all is completely adaptive, but maladaptive when you're not in that environment anymore. So, right. you know, it's about going, okay, why am I thinking this today? And why has that come up? And what situation am I going to be in today? And how relevant is that to that situation? Do I need to take it with me or can I leave it behind?
Right.
You know, and just being really, really compassionate with yourself, because we all have a head full of unhelpful words. And it doesn't mm-hmm. matter if you've got a trauma history or not. You know, nobody is unique in this.
Right. I agree 100%.
You know, and it's just about acknowledging the fact that actually, yeah, that's a really unhelpful statement. You know, why am I saying that to myself? Do I need it? How is it going to help me if I take that through my day? You know, and what can I do to park it and leave it here? Because it's of no help.
Right. And I also learned that if, like, I think we said this earlier, that if you're not liking your environment or what you yep. see around you, it really is the total sum of your thoughts.
Yes.
And what you're thinking and what you're believing and what's coming up. I, for a long time, what I didn't like going out, meaning because of the trauma I experienced with domestic violence and the stalking piece, I never wanted to go out by myself because I always thought yeah. somebody was always following me.
Yeah.
You know, and but what's interesting about that, here I am in a nonprofit and I gotta go out, I gotta do things, da da da. Yep. So I would have to talk myself into going out. I would have to yes. convince myself, like, and even sometimes that was very challenging for me. Mm-hmm. And so I said, what can I do for myself? And that's why I started doing the yoga. I started doing, you know, the meditation mm-hmm. to really calm myself and doing my affirmations and yes. speaking what I wanted to see happen, meaning I'm choosing today. Yes. that this is going to be a good day. I'm going to have a job. Like, I chose what I wanted to see happen. And, yep. but you have to constantly do that. It can't be a one-time thing and be like, oh, it didn't work. You really have to every day, choose what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. And
so that in your business and in your life, you can see the manifestation that you want to see.
Oh God, absolutely. You know, and part of it, you know, in amongst all of this is the sense of, you know, having clear goals, you know, and but also having realistic goals. And I think we live in a society at the moment where all the goals we see around us are so hyped up. You know, it's the have a red Lamborghini with a personal driver, you know, have a 25 bedroom mansion. And it's like, actually, you know, your goal could be to get through the day and to be kind to yourself.
Yes.
You know, and to know that at the end of the day, if you got through the day and you were kind to yourself, job done.
Yeah. You know,
and try and not have all of the pressure to overperform, to be perfect, you know, and just go, actually, today's goal is just to get through the day and to remind myself of why I'm doing this and that I am in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to just be kind to ourselves. And it's really hard to do, you know, but you do have to be consistent. You do have to step into, you have to be aware, you have to be intentional.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, the worst thing about trauma is that it is all consuming.
Yes. Know,
and you have to put yourself in a position of some control. So when I coach, my focus is always on the smallest steps. You know, what is the smallest thing you can do? Because the smallest thing is empowering you to do something different. And even if you only do the smallest thing, the future will have to be different because you did the smallest thing. You have changed the future because you took the smallest step you could. And not putting the pressure on ourselves of going, oh my God, I've got to pull in, you know, $5 million worth of funding. Actually, right. What you have to do is you have to just write the following paragraph on the application you're doing now. That's today's goal. Or, you know,
I love that. Yes.
Because if we get paralyzed by our goals, then we'll achieve nothing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I love it, Erica. So in these last few minutes that we have, is there anything else that you want to leave with the audience?
Just don't lose hope. And I say that, and it probably sounds a bit whimsical, but when I use hope, everything is about having a goal. It's having a belief that the future can be better than the past. And that's what is driving you. That's why you're doing nonprofit, because you have this burning desire to make the future better. Now, the challenge could be that actually subconsciously you're trying to make your future better than your past. And that's where the trauma can be slightly more difficult. But don't lose sight of your overarching goal. Just make sure that it is realistic for you. Make sure that you've enlisted a tribe of people around you that get it and really get it. That you're playing to your strengths and their strengths. That when you need help, you seek it because it's the strongest thing you can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that you remain compassionate to yourself and don't expect too much of yourself. You know, it is a load that can be shared and you're no weaker for sharing it. So you don't have to do everything. You have to have your mission. You have to have your message, but you can enlist others to help you too.
I love that. Thank you so much, Erica. This was simply amazing. I've learned a lot and I know my audience has too. So please tell the listening audience how you can be reached.
Sure. So my website is www.thehopemakers.co.uk. And you can email me at erica@thehopemakers.co.uk.
Thank you so much, Erica. I really appreciate this conversation. I want to thank you. Go ahead. Yes. No, go ahead.
I want to thank you. It's a wonderful podcast. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
Yes, I so appreciate you. And I want to thank you, my listening audience, for tuning into this episode of The Profit in the Nonprofit. To receive a 25-minute consultation, please visit my website at SandraChaney.com. And remember this, especially since we're talking about trauma awareness, remember this, an inspired and successful nonprofit leader is a leader who remembers their why and works from the inside out because it truly is an inside job. Thank you so much for listening.